We're reading Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21. Verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But Jesus said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of one's possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do, for I have nowhere to store my crops?' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God.'"
Steph, thank you for reading for us. And can I add my welcome to Sam's? It's great to see you. Great to have you with us. And we really hope that however long you're here in London, that you'll find a family among us here at Euston Church. This picture that's going to come up on the screen, you may recognize, is Karl Lagerfeld, the fashion designer. You will have seen in the news this week that he sadly died this week, leaving a fortune, they reckon, of $300 million. And the reason that I've shown you this picture with his cat, that's Choupette Lagerfeld, his cat, who they reckon will inherit much of the Lagerfeld fortune. The next picture you can see, she's already used to traveling first class. And apparently, I was reading in this article, it's not that uncommon for the rich and famous to overlook their family and friends in favor of their pets. So here's a chicken called Gekku the Chicken. His owner left him £10 million. Isn't that criminal that you can leave £10 million to a chicken? Actually, it is criminal in France. You're not allowed to do this in France, which is much more sensible. We're far too soft on our pets here in the UK. The next picture you may recognize from the internet, Grumpy Cat. Some of you will have seen the memes and the internet websites which have made Grumpy Cat, well, at least she's self-made, but she's made through her internet activities $125 million. But still can't bring herself to smile. So there you go. Money really can't make you happy if you look at Grumpy Cat. But the richest pet in the world, this is Gunther the Fourth, a German shepherd, German, and has butlers, maids, multiple houses. They didn't actually say in the article whether Gunther has a personal chaplain or spiritual advisor. I've been wondering if there may be a little opening for me as part of Gunther's entourage. But check this out. It's not just that he inherited hundreds of millions of dollars. It was inherited from his father, Gunther III. So not only can animals inherit fortunes, they can write wills as well, in Germany at least. The world really has gone mad. Money, it does strange things to people, and money is the presenting issue in our reading today. Jesus is in the middle of a sermon. He's partly just the greatest preacher that the world has ever known. And we're told at the start of chapter 12, which was our reading last week, that literally thousands are clamoring to hear him. And if you were here last week, you'll know that Jesus has been preaching about some of the biggest concepts in all of life, the kingdom of God. A day when you meet God and his angels. The word hell came up last week. Huge and serious ideas. And in sentence 13, Jesus seems to pause for breath at the beginning of our reading. Did you notice? Any questions? Anyone for the great teacher? Ah, gentleman over at the back with his hand up. Verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." This guy seems to think we're in an episode of Judge Judy, if you know that American reality show. All very interesting, Jesus, but I've got bills to pay, so tell my annoying brother to show me some of the money. It's the kind of disagreement that is very common in families, unfortunately. Maybe you've painfully experienced this in your own family. Conflict over inheritances and wills. There's even an old saying, where there's a will, there's a family. Because this is the real world and normal life and never mind judgment day. When am I getting my share from the sale of grandmother's antique piano? If his brother's trying to cheat him, you can see where he's coming from. And yet, doesn't it just feel so mundane in light of the things that Jesus has been teaching? I mean, imagine I do a talk tonight on heaven and hell, and we have a question time, as we sometimes do at the end, and you write down your question, and you say, "Thanks for the talk, Kev, but my heating and hot water weren't working this morning. Can you please recommend a good plumber?" Now, please ask anything you want here at Euston Church, and I can actually recommend a good plumber. There's a bloke called Darren just up behind King's Cross Station who's very reasonably priced. But it's just that that question would feel a little bit random in the context. This intervention in verse 13 demonstrates a basic and timeless spiritual problem. See, Jesus wants to talk about cross-shaped discipleship with all of its highs and lows. Why it would be worth it to walk that path in light of God and the future. But then, as now, Jesus finds himself speaking to people who are obsessed with now, not the future, comfort, not hands to the plow, and self rather than God. And that just makes us very difficult customers for Jesus to really get through to. See, we instinctively shrink back, don't we, from discipleship road and veer back onto easy street. Or the pursuit of easy street. Or at least an easier life without all these added worries that come with keenly following Jesus. Let's be honest, it's been pretty full on this section since Jesus started talking about discipleship in Luke chapter 9. He kicked off by saying that the priorities of his kingdom come before family and home. Then he told us that we're in a battle with Satan. Last week we had warnings of being hauled before the authorities and even the threat of death in 12 verse 4. To which Jesus' pastoral encouragement was, "Oh, don't worry. The worst they can do is kill you." Great. Discipleship road really is the way of the cross. It's intense. Exhausting. It sounds like it would add significantly to my worries that there'd be sacrifice and missing out on things. Would you rather discipleship road or easy street? Jesus tells this story to sober us up and to shore us up that we are no fools if we give our all towards him. So if you're following along on the inside of the sheet, let's think for a minute about this sobering story. Jesus refuses to be Judge Judy. He doesn't engage with the questioner's squabble with his brother, verse 14. But he does take the opportunity to teach his wider audience a timely lesson. And just have a look down with me. Just notice the precise language in verse 14 and 15. Jesus said to him in verse 14, that's the man who asked the question, but verse 15, he said to them, which is this wider crowd, but particularly, if you look back up at 12 verse 1, his disciples. Always, even as he teaches the crowd, Jesus has an eye to teaching his followers. And so the story begins innocently enough. Chapter 12, verse 16. He told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. Middle class problems, eh? Success brings issues. Business is going so well. What do I do with this mega surplus? Maybe his story was partly luck. Mild winter, but not too mild. Rainy spring, but not too rainy. Oh, it sounds like a lot of initiative and preparation had gone in, because by verse 18, he's preparing things again. Preparing for his early retirement, aged 40 or whatever he is. I say that because he's certainly young enough to expect he has many years left to enjoy it all. Well, let's say he's about my age, shall we say? So still in his prime is the point. Verse 18. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. This next picture we're going to look at is the youngest person in Britain under the age of 30. He's the Duke of Westminster, and he's worth £10 billion. See, get rich young. That's the real trick everybody wants to pull off, isn't it? I mean, there's no point in busting your guts decade after decade and then having to be wheeled straight into the retirement village. Make your fortune early so that you can really enjoy it. So can you picture him, sentence 19? Can you see him sitting on the veranda of his villa, looking out over the rolling fields? Perhaps he's watching with a glass of something as the combine harvesters reap his bumper crop. I think it's not so much our place on the Sunday Times rich list that most of us worry about, or the exact number of zeros that there are on our bank balance itself. The things that excites us, isn't it, is mainly the opportunities that money affords. And wouldn't you love to be able to say what he can say in verse 19? And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax. Eat. Drink and be merry. Hakuna Matata is a Swahili phrase that was popularized on the Disney film The Lion King. There was a song of that name, Hakuna Matata. It means no worries for the rest of your days. And wouldn't it be brilliant? I mean, just imagine the life of no worries. Imagine your biggest worry is, where shall we go on holiday to next? What vintage shall we drink tonight with dinner? Shall we go to the party, or shall we just chill in the jacuzzi with a beer this evening? Oh no, let's go to the party. I mean, YOLO, as the young people say. But then, perhaps he was in the hot tub when it happened. We're not told. Was it a pain in his chest, or did he just slip away quietly in his sleep? But before the night is out, rich boy's dead. course, the funeral was a huge media event. Even the Prime Minister tweeted her condolences for one of the country's finest young entrepreneurs. His innovations will shape the industry for generations, said the economist. Were those the kind of tributes? Jesus, notice, only mentions one obituary to Rich Boy. It's God's. Just one word as a eulogy in verse 20. See it? Fool. Which is not to say, of course, that Rich Boy was a stupid man. Clearly, he was shrewd and organized. Verse 21 was the problem. He prepared and laid up all this treasure for himself, but he hadn't been rich towards God. And you can see that when you look back over the details. See how little God actually featured in his thinking. What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops, my barns, my grain, my goods. I will do this. I will say to my soul. He's even having the conversation with himself. I mean, who needs a heavenly father to talk to about daily bread when you have a lifetime supply stored up for you, provided by you? Did he try to do a deal with God on the night his soul was required of him? I have barns full of grain, God. I can help you. Maybe we can come to some sort of arrangement. I don't know if you've ever thought about what you want them to write on your gravestone. Slightly morbid thing, isn't it, to give much thought to that? Just one word for this man's headstone, as far as God is concerned. Fool. Here lies a fool. Well, it's heavy stuff, isn't it, for a sunny Sunday afternoon. Let's go on into point two and think about what Jesus means by this clear warning. It is a short, sharp shock from Jesus, who always speaks in love. Remember, this is clearly a warning. Jesus doesn't tell stories like this to be cruel or to be hateful. He wants to lovingly warn us to take care. Do you see that language in verse 15? Have a look at verse 15 with me. And he said to them, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of one's possessions. So we're going to spend the rest of our time chewing over the implications of this story for the various different kinds of people who might be listening to Jesus. And I've put them on your sheet under point two. The first is, take care if you're, well, the rich man, obviously. Take care if you're laying up treasure for yourself and not being rich toward God. Obviously, take care if you're a social media billionaire or a fat cat over in the city. But take care too if we'd never have heard of you, but you're just rich enough that you'll be able to get by and enjoy life with what you have. There's way more to life than financial security and the pleasures that it brings. Oh, you may feel self-made, you may feel independent, but you have a creator. And just as he was actually the one who produced the plentiful harvest, even though he was unthanked for it, the same God of provision made you, has a right to make demands over your life, can even require your soul. D.L. Moody was an American preacher in the 1800s. He said, our greatest fear should not be of failure, but of succeeding at something that doesn't really matter. Our greatest fear should not be failure, but succeeding at something that doesn't really matter in the end. That's the tragedy of the rich man. And the tragedy is, it wasn't just that he was some hedonist who was all about right now. He thought, he planned for the long term, just not long term enough. Back to the picture of the young guy who's the Duke of Westminster. Do you know why he became the Duke of Westminster a couple of years ago at the age of 26? Because his dad, who's in the next picture, he tragically collapsed and died one day of a heart attack in his early 60s. Sadly, his billions couldn't even buy him a long life, never mind an exemption from the realities of death and eternity. Please don't get this wrong. God is not anti-money. That's not the point of this parable. He's not prejudiced against the rich as a class of people. He uses wealthy people, actually, to do wonderfully benevolent things, and we'll hear more about that in next week's passage. But the more comfort I have now, the harder it tends to be to engage with Jesus when he talks about God and sacrifice and the future. Challenges, what are you living for? Is what you're living for death proof? Or will death make a mockery of it all? Do you know, I think the real tragedy of the rich man is he probably isn't even in the crowd to hear that warning. Like millions of Londoners aren't today. Secondly, take care too if you are listening to Jesus from the crowd. Remember the guy who asked the Lord to have a go at his brother? At least he was there. Kind of listening to a sermon on discipleship. He clearly gets that Jesus is someone you should go to for help and justice. Probably not rich like the rich man, but he's just as focused on storing up treasure for himself. And there are plenty of people in the world like that, aren't there? Who are not rich at all, but are consumed by coveting money and stuff that would really sort my life out. I said how random his question feels, given the weighty matters that Jesus is on to here. But it's so real, that interruption, isn't it? I mean, just at the basic level, how often do you find your mind distracted during sermons or Bible studies by total trivia? I mean, if your hot water did break this morning, I guess that probably is a very pressing thing on your mind right now. When am I going to get the next shower? How much do bigger, ongoing, material concerns make it hard for us to focus on Jesus? Parallels with Martha here. Tell my sister to help me, Martha said. Tell my brother to give me my share. I know one of you remembers that sermon on Mary and Martha, because I caught you out there just before the sermon, downing a cup of coffee, saying, I have to have this to stay awake during your sermon, which is very encouraging. But that was one of the applications of that week. Stay caffeinated if it helps you to keep listening to Jesus. This man, like Martha, is anxiously distracted from really listening. And so take care. If that's you, take care if, like him, you expect Jesus to be mainly in the business of sorting out your wealth and security here and now. Do you know the irony is, Jesus actually has a much bigger vision for our well-being, for your well-being, than our often very limited ambitions for our lives. More than a healthy bank balance, Jesus wants to give you the kingdom. More than security for the next 70 years, he wants your soul to be safe in an eternal home. Are you too distracted, though, to hear the great teacher properly? Well, wake up to what this parable is saying and Don't let the tragedy of the rich fool become the tragedy of you. And finally, on the sheet there, take care if you're a disciple. Remember, this parable's not primarily to atheist capitalists in the first instance, but to disciples. It's told in a discipleship class, so take care, followers of Jesus here this evening. The language of verse 15, be on your guard, suggests this is tapping into something creeping that will always have the potential to scupper faithful discipleship. And so I want to briefly apply this to disciples in three ways that I hope we will pick up afterwards in chats and in personal reflection of your own. First, envy. Jesus says, be on your guard against all covetousness. You know, I was starting to get into describing life in the hot tub when I said, can you picture the scene? I mean, I could quite happily picture the scene for quite a long time. Were you jealous of rich boy in verse 19? No worries for the rest of his days. My wife Laura and I went to a wedding a couple of years ago that was definitely the most impressive event that I have ever been at. It was a wedding in a country mansion in amazing grounds. They had a cocktail bar where you could go and invent your own drink and give it a name. The meal was supplied by the couple's favourite Indian restaurant, which is actually in South London. And what they did was they had all the chefs and all of their favourite waiters from the restaurant in South London transported into Oxfordshire to serve the meal. In the marquee where we were, there was a curtain along one end. I assumed the kitchen area was behind that. But at the end of the meal, this curtain dropped to reveal a huge stage, and a troupe of Bollywood dancers led us in the entertainment. Do you know, originally this couple had wanted to fly all of their friends to New York to have their wedding there and for them to pay for it. The father of the bride noted ruefully in his speech that the New York option would have been cheaper than what he actually paid for in the end. And wonderful as all of this was, God wasn't mentioned once at this wedding. And please don't hear that as me being the grumpy Christian pastor. This couple aren't believers, and in a way it was good that they didn't want to be hypocrites. But the wedding ceremony that took place was in the orangery. It was secular. The reading was from Winnie the Pooh. And we sang an Elton John song instead of a hymn. And it just struck me, all this luxury and blessings, really good gifts that were being enjoyed, not one single mention of God the good giver. No need for him. That's the rich fool. And isn't it just so easy for disciples to envy him or her and forget that they are on the path to destruction? Easy to self-pityingly, covetously engage in Christian discipleship, all the time thinking, poor me, the sacrifices I make to focus on serving, the relaxation, the security I forego to engage in mission. So yeah, we do our duty, but actually focusing all the time on what we're missing out on. And I think that's something that you will feel more starkly as life goes on. See, the consequences of your faithful discipleship choices, big and small, will look very starkly different 10 years down the line from the life of your peers who haven't sought to be living for Jesus. And at that point, you may crave easy street. Jesus says, take care. Don't envy those who are fine now, but are nowhere spiritually. The eternal perspective may be hard to focus on, but Jesus says, you are no fool if you're trying to live as if the kingdom of God is the thing that really matters in the end. Fear is the second word I've put on your sheet there. The verses just before our parable are riddled with anxiety, 12 verse 11, and fear, 12 verses 4 to 7. Fear of what might happen to me if I'm too public in my allegiance to Jesus. So yeah, there could be economic consequences, as there have been for believers down the generations and around the world today. Maybe your job on the line before authorities. It may be less dramatic, but your standing and prospects in the company or in your country diminished because of your loyalty to him. And we start to ask anxious questions. Will I have enough? Will I be put to shame? How will I get by if I prioritize discipleship over career? How will I get by if I do something like a year of training for ministry, or even a lifetime giving up the career for full-time Christian ministry? Natural worries. But it will devastate your discipleship in the end if you focus on your fears about worldly security. That's the path of hoarding your life now at all costs, rather than the path of giving your life away for the sake of Jesus, and thus saving it for eternity. See, Jesus' encouragement, "Oh, don't worry, the worst they can do is kill you," really is encouraging if we take that longer view. The rich man had it all for a moment, but lost his soul. You are no fool if you take your accountability to the judge of all seriously. If you take seriously the security that you can have in him. Oh, don't worry about yourself, disciple. You'll be fine in Jesus. Worry about those who are on course for hell. And proclaim the kingdom from the rooftops to them. Hypocrisy is the final word. It's very interesting. Jesus hasn't actually moved on from having a go at the Pharisees. That was last week. Just look, it's very interesting. 11 verse 39, he said to them, "Inside you're full of greed and wickedness." 11 verse 40, to the Pharisees, "You fools." 11 verse 42, "Woe to you Pharisees, for you tithe mint and rue and every herb and neglect justice and the love of God." Fools who use their stuff greedily and neglect God. Religious people might dress and talk differently from atheist capitalists, but boy, can the religious be the rich fool. And I take it that's why Jesus says in 12 verse 1, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees," which is hypocrisy. Much more dangerous than the threat of giving up discipleship road in one screeching maneuver. The Pharisees' way leads you to drift back onto easy street, such a way that you might not notice at first at all. Because you still come to church, still give, maybe teach, even like them. But actually storing up treasure for yourself and not being rich toward God. I was thinking, I guess the test of that is, does your discipleship cost you anything or threaten your worldly security and comfort at all? If not, is that because hypocrisy and compromise have drifted in? Quite good diagnostic tests, I think, these three words. Envies. What are your envies? What are your fears? Where are you tempted to hypocrisy and compromise on discipleship road? Much more next week on positively and practically what it means to be rich towards God, as that final phrase says. That's the way to keep on discipleship track. Rich towards God. To be continued on that front next week. But today, hear the warning. Take care. How's your soul? Be on your guard, especially here in ambitious London, where we love to tear down and build bigger. D.L. Moody again. Our greatest fear should not be of failure, but of succeeding at something that doesn't really matter. Shall we pray?